Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, diving into some grinding the mocks data as we head up into the rookie draft. I've been getting down and looking at some of the rookie draft stuff in earnest here, and I've got some data projects that I'm sort of like milling around on. I'm kind of excited about as we get going more forward into March and April. We'll be doing that more in earnest here. I might even have a book topic coming out of it, so we'll have to see there how that goes. But you'll get a tune in to that along that ride. But I'm excited about jumping into rookie drafts really March and April. Pretty much, I would say by mid-March through to April, it's going to be a lot of that, right? You're going to have your trade shows, you're going to have your strategy sessions and stuff on Sundays, and here and there on some other movement stuff. But by and large, the other 5 days of the week, I would expect, 80%+ of that content is probably going to be related to rookies. So excited about this going forward. I tend to start late intentionally because this is a smaller aspect of what we do. It should be, right? We should, and I think this is how you get into a permanent rebuild, is by spending January through May of each year just focusing on rookies, right? If you're doing that, you're fulfilling, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so I don't do that, and I tend to, it's almost like thinking about, it's like a swing thought, right? When you get over your head and you're playing golf and you're thinking, don't hit the ball left, 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 and you hit the ball left, right? Or if it's, instead of that, if it's, hey, hit the ball down the middle, hit the ball down the middle, hit the ball down the middle, right? You have to think the positive thought to sort of get your mind saying it. That's kind of how I view like starting my rookie draft prep in December, right? Like, I can't really get into that because that means I'm giving up time competing. So that's part of our ethos around these parts. So I know people have been asking, hey, when are you going to do rookies? We're here. We're getting there. And we'll have some this week. Then we're covering free agency. Obviously, the combine free agency. I have the hierarchy of needs coming out. And then really from that point on, it'll be focusing on rookies. So there's your schedule. All right. So looking here forward at the quarterback stuff, right? I think it's interesting. And I've seen people say all over the place, like, hey, you could take the under, it's like it's plus a lot of money, but take the under on a half of quarterbacks going in the first round. You could do that. Or you could say, take multiple going in the top 10, right? You could do something like that. I tend to think my general principle at this time of year is to think that quarterbacks are going to go higher than they're going right now as they tend to rise. We've seen that. We've got prior examples of that. Baker, Kyler Murray, Trevor Lawrence is basically always there. But I think really like in the past, in the past few years here, it has been Baker, it has been Kyler Murray, right? Those guys rising up the board kind of at this point weren't necessarily thought to be elite players, and then they go one overall, right? I think that's I don't think there's gonna be a quarterback that goes one overall this year, but you sort of get the idea, right? I think that they kind of blended in, and then everyone gets excited about pro days and all the stuff. I think quarterbacks will rise. So as we look right here right now, Kenny Pickett is at expected draft position of 9.9, Malik Willis at 10. So they're in the top, they're at 6 and 7 in terms of ranking of their expected draft position. If you remember from last year, expected draft position over at Grinding the Mocks, which is a site we use, expected draft position basically is what the model spits out. It's almost like an ADP, if you will. And then he then goes back and basically re-ranks it and says, all right, here's kind of the expected draft position, and then here's actually where that ranks, because what'll get, there'll be some numbers that'll get a little bit bunched together. It gets bunched together like in the late double digits, like into the hundreds. Like there becomes a lot of players kind of bunched right there. And what you'll see is the way that the line curve would spread out, 124, for example, is actually the 133rd player, right? Like 176 in terms of EDP. EDP actually is the 154th player. Like, so the line isn't necessarily totally linear in terms of how that all goes. And it's the sample size and all that stuff. So we do look at a couple things, kind of expected draft position as being the it's like, hey, kind of here's where we're thinking. But I actually think that looking at the rank of where they're expected to be drafted is probably a better marker. So Pickett, again, he's expected draft rank is at 6. Willis is 7. You know, and their positions are expected right around 10. Matt Corral, more later first. We don't have a ton of those examples. And I was doing this research project earlier this year for the book, and it was like, hey, you know, who's really the late first round guys? Like, there's this mythical, hey, you're going to go back in the late first round and draft, you know, so you get the fifth year option. The guys from back there are Lamar Jackson and Rodgers. Really, like, it's not a ton of guys. Like, Bridgewater, there's, like, some other guys, but they're largely projects. Like, if I had to sort of categorize them, they're projects. I think, like, Paxton Lynch might have been one of them. Like, there's been others that have sort of gone back there. But it's generally speaking Paxton Lynch at 26. It's generally speaking not a fruitful place. And I think that conversation about that that's like the day two developmental guy, right? Those two guys are like, they're mythical, totally mythical. So like, it's certainly interesting, but I would say generally speaking, not super impactful dynasty wise. So when you start looking at that, I would take the under on 23 for Matt Corral, or earlier in the draft, I guess I would say. Sam Howell at 30 in the late first there. Desmond Ridder at 32. And then you have a pretty big tier break. So, you know, there's 5 there. I mean, if that holds true, I think it's interesting, right? I think we'll probably be taking some shots, right? Kind of like in a Mac Jones type sense. But I don't feel a ton of confidence. And if you're quarterback 5 in this class, it's notably worse than being quarterback 5 last year. Especially if you're quarterback 5 at 30 overall, even if you're a first-round quarterback. So, just using those two as comp sets, I think, is interesting. So, Carson Strong is basically the next one. He's kind of a third-rounder. And then Bailey Zappe and Caleb Ellaby are the only other guys here really getting much love. So, I know Pickett's got an issue with his throwing hand, some size stuff. I guess he's like double jointed. There's some hand thing that with him that I think we'll get plenty of coverage about. I'm recording this on March 1st. By the time you listen to this, you might be already sick of the Kenny Pickett hand saga. Prepare yourself. And I know, you know, 9 inches is the big thing there. So there's some data to suggest that there's probably some selection bias in there as well. I will say this, Matt Corral, a little bit more mobile. Malik Willis, really the runner. I think at this point, if there's a guy I'm going to take a swing on sort of high up, it's going to be Malik Willis. We'll see sort of how this class looks like. This class strikes me as one, especially at the running back position. If we get a first rounder, I'm not going to take a quarterback 101 overall on Superflex. If there's going to be anyone, I think Malik Willis, just the throwing profile of Malik Willis is something that, listen, you just kind of have to be there's some elite stuff there in terms of his big time throw rate, which really is something I think, like, that's something you take a swing on. And then, you know, listen, there's he's got the running ability as well, so you can kind of blend those two things. I know that there's some mechanical stuff. I do want to I'll share a link to at some point here with a podcast that Ryan Russillo did with Jordan Palmer, and it was, I think, Quincy Avery was the other person, and they were just talking about the mechanical stuff about quarterbacks. Now they're basically not coached to do it. And it's just, there's just not enough time. He strikes me as a quarterback that could use sort of the quarterback schooling, if you will, that maybe a more professional environment will allow for him. So, we struggle to think about how players are going to develop. Give me the one that can make a difference. And hope he develops rather than give me one that I think is going to be low upside and hope he develops to sort of hit his upside. Right, that's sort of my thing. As we go back and look at this, like Sam Darnold as an example of that, like Rosen, like should have never sort of been in on that type of guy. Should have taken swings at Josh Allen more. Should have taken swings at Lamar Jackson more. So those paradigms, I think, are important. So Malik Willis sort of really fits that for me so far this year. Well, really, I'll be interested to see where he goes overall in the draft as well. And honestly, requires probably some coaching, some coaching changes, right? Some, some adaptation. And you want what would be interesting, a place like Pittsburgh, you want, I think, some stability there and some credibility there in the coaching staff. You don't want one of these places like maybe Houston that's consistently flipping over their coaching staff. Like that's a lesser sign for me. As much as we try and pick, landing spots or don't try to pick landing spots, that's one that let him go to a place that's a little bit more established. All right, flip it over here to the running back position. We've got, I'm hopeful for some guys that going on day two. It doesn't seem like there's a ton of chance of day one early on. Kenneth Walker, Isaiah Spiller, and Breece Hall are going to be the top three guys there. They're pretty close in the mid-50s to mid-60s there. Then there's a tier break. Kyron Williams, Tyler Algier from BYU also sneaking in there into the third round. Brian Robinson in the third round. James Cook. Zamir White, and White is a little bit older and was a big-time recruit but didn't really do much. And so he's one that, like, again, draft pedigree I think will tell us a lot. But you kind of have to think, hey, maybe the profile's not entirely there in terms of production-wise. But that could be a piece that, listen, if it's a third-round rookie pick, that's interesting, right? That's kind of the thing there. I know James Cook is probably going to be a little bit undersized, sort of how we view him. I think in the paradigm of pedigree is going to be a big, big deal. And then you look down a little bit. There's not a ton of data for guys like outside of day three. That will sort of flesh out as we go along here. Damian Pierce and Jerome Ford, both fourth, fifth rounders, as well at the running back position. All right, wide receivers here. And it's Treylon Burks, Drake London, Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams. Right, they're all top. In the teens, I would say, like it's the expected mid-teens. It's really the expected range. 13 for Burks, up to 22 for Jameson Williams. Chris Olave in the late first round at 27 there. I was just checking some notes. I just from the simple, like the keep it really simple math that I've sort of used to sort of help my process in rookie drafts. I really like to look at guys that have 18-year-old or 19-year-old breakouts. Just for 20% market, 20% dominator rating. Dominator rating is the combination of your what percentage of yards you were in an offense combined with the percentage of touchdowns that you receiving touchdowns that you were in the offense, and you divide it by two. It's an average of those two, and so. You combine those two, and then you try and see at what age did they go over 20%? What age did they go over 30%? You definitely want a 20% breakout, right? It's not the end all. Doesn't end the world, but it is a big difference. Kadarius Toney, some others, are sort of looking to really get on the board from like a lack of 20% breakout. If memory serves, I don't think Waddle broke that, so he crashed that threshold, so that's good for him. But yeah, you want them. I mean, it's the simple premise is be good from a young age, right? If you're good from a young age, you're probably good. And I think that's really the place that you can kind of, if you just a really simple KISS method, keep it simple, stupid, that's a good place to start. So let's look at, I'll highlight some of these guys just to give you an idea. Drake London broke out at 19. Olave broke out at 19. George Pickens broke out at 18. Wandell Robinson at 19. David Bell at 18. Justin Ross at 18. And he's got some injury stuff, and it hasn't necessarily been a great finish to his career. I'm really interested in what his draft cost is going to be. So he'll be one that almost in like a Diggs type way we'll see if the injuries kind of derailed him and he goes later in the draft, and we'll sort of see how that fleshes out. But he's one that we'll be watching as well. So those are the bigger names. And then like John Menchie at 21, he's a name that's getting has gotten some mention, but he's got a later breakout. Treylon Burks, Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams, all at 20 years old. Sky Moore is a name that has been bandied about a little bit as well. He broke out at 20. So those are kind of some of the just some of the names when you're thinking about them going forward, about where they might go. Jahan Dotson as well. He broke out at he broke out at 20 as well. Jahan Dotson broke out at 20 for an even better at 30. Breakout age as well, or 30% breakout, which would be, you know, getting your dominator rating over 30, which is an even better number. You know, a lot of those guys did that as well. I just take the initial one because that gives you a good starting point for what their hit rates are going to be. You know, so you start looking at those guys that are you know, under basically 18 or 19 years old in round one. That's really the pretty lush spot. I still have to do my updating for the last class, but through the 2018 class, those guys that first rounders that were over 20% at 18 or 19 years old, they were 71% breakout rate, 71% hit rate in the NFL, 45% for guys that were either at, that were 20 or 21. So you definitely want younger, right? And that kind of holds as well. Pretty much throughout. It definitely holds in the second round. It's a little inverted in the third round. So I don't know. I have to look at that a little bit more and see why that might be. But yeah, so that's really the quick and skinny, right? So high draft pedigree and productive. That's what we're shooting for. So and productive from a young age. So I broke down some of the guys here. Again, this isn't an exhaustive list. We'll have more data. I think we'll get more mock drafts as well. Some of the, as you get sort of into the second round, a lot of these mock drafts aren't two rounds. So as you start to get into the second round, a really diminishing return of numbers. But 18 or 19 year old breakouts for 20%. Dominator rating, Drake London, Chris Olave, George Pickens, Wandale Robinson, David Bell, Justin Ross, Christian Watson as well at North Dakota State. Of those guys, London and Olave both projected to be first-round picks. I will say if that continues to hold, and Olave is like the fifth or sixth first-rounder, he's going to be a target guy. I can pretty much put that in – and a very dark, unerasable pencil would be sort of the thing there. Again, Justin Ross in the third round. I'd like to see some second-round pedigree out of him. But if he's held back by injury and the like, they've got to do some more digging there. That's a really interesting one because I think that's one that can make a difference. And that's, you know, I've been thinking more about like the batting average versus slugging percentage type of comp. He's one that can have a big time slugging percentage, and that's probably what we should be aiming for down there. So that would probably be a recommendation later on as well. I know Wandale Robinson has some size concerns, so we'll see that. Hopefully get some of that cleared up this week. Christian Watson out of North Dakota State is interesting. However, as I sort of look at his, and again, I'll do a full breakdown, he's at 46.8 in terms of grinding the mocks ranks right now. So again, right in the mid-second round there. When you look at him, not a huge, not super productive in terms of what he did at college. But when you sort of look at the, especially on like a, on a per route basis and all that stuff, his per route stuff, it was like 66th percentile, which is like, okay. But when you start looking at it, he's 20.5% of his routes he was targeted on. That's 30th percentile. Percentages of his routes that are contested, which I kind of use for a marker of like, here's guys that separate. Right, if you're playing in an offense and you're just constantly catching contested balls, that's not a good sign. And he's bottom five in percentile in that. Right, so again, that gives me a lot of pause. And you're going to make a big step up in competition. That's a big time concern there for me. He does do a good job of breaking tackles at a like a 71st percentile rating. So we'll see there in terms of how he performs at the combine. That's one I'm definitely going to be watching. 20 and 21-year-old breakouts. It's Burks. He's at 13 in terms of expected draft rank. Garrett Wilson, 15 in terms of expected draft rank, and Jameson Williams, 22 in expected draft rank. I will say this: if Jameson Williams, if the narrative coming out of him is, hey, he might miss the year, might miss a good chunk of the year. He did have a torn ACL late in the college football season. If that's what's going to be the case, like I'm going to be in on him. Right, and I think I can already tell you some of the plays that I can see unfolding. Right, it would be Olave, it would be Jameson Williams if he falls. Like those types of bets I really like. And Drake London had a pretty elite year in some of the marks that I look at as well this past year. So he's one that's definitely interesting as well. Again, we'll get more data, but that's just some like 35,000-foot highlights. Jahan Dotson, second round, early second round there. Jalen Tolbert in the third round. Menchie, again, later on as well. And he's still dealing with some injuries as well there. So those are some of the situations to watch at wide receiver as we sort of start looking at the grinding the mock stuff. And as you start thinking about the combine, think about some of those guys. As you look down at the tight end position, I do think, hopefully we'll get some second day two guys this year. That's kind of what my hope is. Jalen Widmeyer, Trey McBride, both projected to be second round guys right now. Isaiah Likely, Jeremy Ruckert into the third round there. And then it's kind of a bigger, it's a gap to later on. So be interested to see sort of how this whole how this class unfolds from overall perspective. I think it's generally thought of as a down class. If we don't get, I think you can grade a class pretty much by the amount of top 10 quarterbacks and the amount of first round running backs, and then after that, right, it's your if you don't have those, you almost can't be an elite. You almost can't be an elite class. So that would sort of be my big concern there. With this class is we don't have a ton of that stuff. So that's the pause that I have. Again, I'll be excited to cover this combine and the like, but those would be the big concerns that I have here with the class as a whole. So, but all right. Well, that'll do it for this. Again, I'll have combine coverage here throughout the week. I'm trying to still sort out the schedule that they sent out, the revamped schedule they sent out. Didn't make a ton of sense in terms of how they were doing the measurements. It appears they're giving all the measurements, like all the weigh-ins and everything like that, the actual day of the drills, which is atypical. That's not typically how it goes. So that'd be a Thursday. So it'll be a full-on sprint Thursday, Friday, basically, if that's going to be the case. The schedule they sent out didn't make it. It's different than it was in prior years, and I don't know if that's COVID or what the purpose of that was, but we will be watching that, and I'll have you covered when that we start getting that information. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this edition, and until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.